You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th voice.
This is the 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
We're here, we're queer, and in your ear. I'm your host, Elaine Meislish, and welcome to the February 21st edition of the 10th Voice, Kansas City's only broadcast for the LGBTQ and welcoming communities. Each week, the 10th Voice explores themes, information, and news that is important to the queer community. We're also streaming on the web at kkfi.org, so welcome to all those for listening online, and thanks for taking the time to listen today. Well, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have thought of using the words love, commitment, and legal marriage together in a sentence to describe being in a gay relationship. But social and political change have happened and are continuing to happen. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about the personal side of gay marriage. On May 15, 2008, the California Supreme Court, by a vote of 4-3, ruled that individuals of the same sex have the right to marry under the California Constitution. A UCLA study estimated that about 18,000 same-sex couples have been married between June and early November of 2008. On November 4, 2008, as many of you know, an amendment known as Proposition 8 banning same-sex marriage was passed by the California voters. Currently, marriages between same-sex couples have been suspended in that state. Numerous lawsuits have been filed with the California Supreme Court by same-sex couples and government entities challenging the proposition's validity and effect on previously administered same-sex marriages. Ken Starr and the Proposition 8 Legal Defense Fund filed briefs defending the constitutionality of Proposition 8 and are now seeking to nullify the marriages of the 18,000 couples who were married before Proposition 8 was passed. The California Supreme Court is going to start hearing oral arguments in this case on March 5th, with a decision expected within 90 days. And so I have on today's show two of these couples, Roberta Woods and Julie Warwick, and David Greenbaum and Mike Silverman. They will be talking about their relationship, their decision to get married, and how they are being impacted by the passage of Proposition 8, and what are their thoughts about what is happening now, trying to nullify their marital vows. That's so cool to say and so weird at the same time. So we'll take a short break, and when we return, begin our discussion.
It's a miracle of nature. Just to be alive tonight, awake in your arms, the world and its charms lit up by candlelight. It's a miracle of feeling to love despite the fear. So please don't forget, I've had no regrets since you found me here. 'Cause through the years we've been happy, through the years we've been sad, and sometimes feeling lucky was the only luck we But I would not trade the laughter or the tears through the years.
Welcome back. You're listening to the 10th Voice on 90.1 FM KKFI. I'm your host, Elaine Meislish, and you were just listening to Janice Ian singing from her CD, The Best of Janice Ian, Autobiography Collection, the song Through the Years. And I have on today's show two couples who have been living and sharing their lives together through the years, and in the past year went to California and got married. My guests are Roberta Woods and Julie Warwick, and David Greenbaum and Mike Silverman. Roberta and Julie live in Lawrence and have been together for 19 years, and they work in the library system at the University of Kansas. David has his own independent computer repair business, and Mike is a software quality assurance engineer from Motorola. They too, also live and work in Lawrence. Both of these couples are here today to talk about their love and commitment to each other and their experience in going to California to get married. So welcome to all of you for coming out today to be on the 10th Voice and coming to Kansas City.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Roberta and Julie, we'll get started by asking you some questions. How long have the two of you been together?
We're coming up on 20 years this summer.
And how did you all meet?
We had a mutual friend who introduced us, and at the time, it was just really, we both knew this person, and she introduced us. So it wasn't really, we didn't have expectations at that time about what this would be.
And so you were just meeting as friends at the time?
Yes.
And how out were you when you first got together?
Let's see. I had come out in 1983, actually on the day I graduated from high school. So I'd been out for a little while.
So how old were you when you came out?
18.
And what about you, Julie?
When we got together, I was a little bit out. I was involved in the campus gay group, but other than that, not a lot.
And so you were all in Lawrence?
Yes.
And are you from Lawrence, Roberta?
No, I'm originally from Central Kentucky.
Oh, okay. And so you came out right after you graduated high school then?
Yes.
And so had you had same-sex relationships before you all met?
Yes.
I had a couple of serial monogamy relationships before that.
And when did you all then, so what happened?
Well, we started going out. There was this little club in Lawrence called Diamonds, and we started going there with our friend who had introduced us and dancing and getting to know each other. And then really it was around the July the 4th weekend of 89 that we stayed up all night long talking to each other, and we just had all these conversations. I don't know. The dawn came, and it just seemed like, honestly, at that moment, I thought to myself, this is the person that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. And I had never had that thought before. So.
Wow. And Julie, what about for you?
It wasn't quite as much of a light bulb moment for me.
Uh-huh.
It took a little bit longer, but it was, once we started hanging out together, that's pretty much all I wanted to do is just, you know, spend time together, and a little bit after the 4th of July weekend, I knew it was it. The more time that we spent together, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
And so then in August of that same year, that was when we really decided that we were going to be more serious, just date one another,
mm-hmm.
and pursue this relationship. And so that's when we really started dating seriously.
You know, and sometimes working with people and friends through the years, too, that question comes up, okay, so you're dating, so when do you start living together? So how did that happen in this relationship?
We actually dated for about a year and a half before we moved in together. And I think that was a really good part of our being together, in that we didn't just jump into it right away, that we spent a lot of time getting to know each other before moving in.
And the long-term relationship I had prior to meeting Julie, I had moved in right away,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was one of the things that just put a lot of stress on our relationship, this other woman and I. And for me, it was also very important that we not just jump right in, but that we date. So we did. We lived apart, and we had dates. We went out once a week on a date.
Wow. Uh-huh. So that was a very conscious decision
very much
you
so.
All
yes.
made,
yes.
and based on your previous experience.
Yes.
that seemed to be the way for you all.
And then as time went on, of course, we hung out more, we dated more, and then things just started to develop from there. And so after a year and a half, we did move in together.
So. Mm-hmm. And so were you out to your families? Were you out, Roberta?
Yes, I came out to my parents in 84.
Uh-huh.
I was not very out to my family yet.
So that was something that happened once you all had gotten together?
Yeah. Just it was mostly by virtue of not really living anywhere near my family. It's not that I wouldn't have come out. It's just that there wasn't much of a need to because I didn't really see them very often.
Where are you from?
Most of my family, well, they live everywhere. At the time, I had moved from Hayes, Kansas, about 4 or 5 years previously, and that's where my mom still lives.
Uh-huh. And so it was once you all got to, so you weren't out to your family before you all got together.
Right.
And then over time. So how did your parents respond to you and Julie getting together?
Well, I didn't have a lot of contact with my family mm-hmm. right at that moment in time. And so when I very first came out, my parents definitely were very freaked out about it. And then they sort of gave in, I guess you could say. They were resigned to it. We didn't really talk a lot then. It's funny, after my mother passed away and my father remarried, the woman that he married was very accepting of Julie. And so my family dynamic changed quite a bit after my dad remarried.
After that. Mm-hmm. And Julie, what was your parents' response when you came out to them? You know, and again, I'm asking this sort of from the perspective. Sometimes when you come out, they can put it on the partner, the person that you're with, more than it's you. So
was I that woman?
Yeah, were you that woman?
I'm not. My mom's reaction was kind of a non-reaction. It wasn't entirely negative. It wasn't entirely positive. My sisters and other family have been accepting, and I'm not really sure what my father's reaction was because I wrote him a letter, and then not too long after that, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and so I don't know that he ever really knew, and I didn't have much contact with him afterwards. But with my mom, who I have the most contact with regularly, she's fine. It mm-hmm. just has taken a lot of time.
And it does. I mean, there's this whole process that people have to go through when, you know, they have to go through their own coming out process, so to speak.
Definitely.
As we've all had to go through ours. And Mike and Dave, what about you? How long have the two of you been together?
Well, we've been together a little bit over 12 years now.
And how did you all meet?
Well, we met through a mutual friend. I was attending law school at KU at the time, and this friend said, "You've got to meet my roommate who's a bigger computer geek than you." And I said, "I seriously doubt that." So the first time we met, we talked about Macintoshes all night long, comparing notes and all that, and then we became really good friends uh-huh. through the Macintosh user group in Lawrence.
It was true geek love at first sight.
And Dave, I didn't know you were in law school at the time.
Yeah, I was in law school at the time. Mike was an undergraduate, and I was in law school, and we met. I met his roommate through the KU Hillel Foundation, the Jewish Student Center.
Mm-hmm. So, how old were you guys at the time?
Oh, let's see. I was a lot younger than I am now.
Yeah. You had hair. I remember meeting you with hair.
Yeah, I was a. I was a junior at KU, so I was about 20 at the time, and Dave would have been 22 or so.
So you were the older guy here.
I was the older man.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Still remain it.
And how out were you? How aware were you? How out were you at the time?
Well, it's an interesting story because at the time that we met, neither of us was actually out. Both of us were still in the closet.
Uh-huh.
And so as our friendship developed, there wasn't any, you know, there wasn't a, since neither of us was out to each other, we just became friends without any other subtext.
Mm-hmm.
And after being friends for a few years, Dave came out to me, and about a year later, I came out to him.
And Dave, what was happening with you?
Well, you know, we were just thinking about it. My first reaction when he came out to me was, why didn't you tell me when I came out to you? And then we were just sitting there one day. I think it was right before your company holiday party. And we kind of looked at each other and said, gosh, we've been dating for a couple of years, haven't we? I guess we're in a relationship now. And then, it was just really Christmas Eve. What year was it? You're better at years.
It was Christmas Eve of 1996. We rented a really bad Keanu Reeves movie, and we're watching it, and we were sitting there, and we realized, you know what, we're a couple now.
Mm-hmm. And it just kind of went from there.
Had either one of you had any other serious relationships before that time?
No, I haven't. I dated a few times, but Dave was my first and only long-term relationship.
Same here.
I mean, so it sounds like for all of you, you all developed a friendship as the basis of getting to know each other.
Yes, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing nicer than being married to your best friend.
Yeah. And so when did you then start living together as you began to acknowledge, well, I guess we're dating?
Well, for a few months when we were dating, Dave had an apartment here in Kansas City and I lived in Lawrence. And so every weekend I'd drive in and spend the weekend. And after his lease was up, he moved to Lawrence and we got a house together, rented a house in West Lawrence. I think this was back in 1997.
And then I think it was a year later we went ahead and bought a house together.
Yeah, that's so after that we bought our place where we've been ever since.
So in many ways you came out together.
It was a process. I mean, I guess Mike helped me come out more, and then I think maybe as we became closer to each other, I think at one point you decided it was important for you to come out to me as we became closer and closer friends. And then we realized we had this connection and that really we really wanted to spend the rest of our lives together. We just enjoyed each other's company so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so as I had asked Roberta and Julie about then coming out to the families, and because you had come out much earlier, your family had some awareness. What was it like for you all?
When I came out to my parents, it could have been taken from, a PFLAG video or something. My mom and my dad, everyone reacted just perfectly. The first thing that they said is, we want you to know that we love you very much and we fully support you. And, there's certainly an adjustment after the initial message, but my whole family's given me nothing but the fullest support, from day one. So it's been amazing, and they've really supported me and Dave in our relationship.
And where did you come from?
I'm from Omaha. That's where most of my family still lives.
Uh-huh. And Dave, what about you?
It was a little bit harder for me. I came out to my sister, all the dates. When did I come out? I came out to my sister first,
uh-huh.
And then about a year later or so, I came out to my parents because I said I wasn't going to come out until I was actually in a relationship. And in the same conversation, I said, Mom, I'm dropping out of law school. I'm gay, and I'm marrying Michael Silverman. So I got it all out of the table all at once. So it was a little bit of a harder adjustment.
Yeah.
The conversation went from, wait, you're dropping out of law school. Wait a minute, you're in a relationship with another guy. Hold on a sec. So it took them some adjustment, but I mean they really came around. The story we like to tell is my father passed away in October 2003. And the last anniversary card he got us in June 2003, he picked out and he signed. And that was a big step that he was completely accepting right at the end.
And where are you from? Where did they live?
I'm originally from New York, but they were living in Florida at the time.
Uh-huh. Wow. So it sounds like they gradually came.
They really. I think both of our families equally accept us as couples, and with all the rights and sometimes some of the responsibilities of that.
Uh huh. And we had said earlier, made just some reference how again you all sometimes people get involved in relationships and may not have had that friendship established at first to help you through those kinds of times too. You think that makes a difference?
Oh yes, I do. I definitely do.
Uh-huh. And Mike?
It's very important if you know, the person that you're with isn't your best friend, then you know something's wrong. And I think it really is special that you can spend spend your whole life with your best friend.
And you all, you know, are evidence of that, you know, being here today, too, talking about
it. We have so much in common, and we just really enjoy each other's company so much. I mean, I just can't imagine being with anyone else.
And you always got the computers.
We always have the computers.
Now, interestingly, each of you had a commitment ceremony earlier on in your relationship. And when I was thinking about doing the show, you know, I knew about you and Mike, but I didn't know about the two of you having had that. And I thought, oh, that'll be really interesting to talk about, as then we'll talk about then later on you went and got married. So tell us about your commitment ceremony. How far into the long into the relationship? Relationship and was it when you decided to do this?
I think we'd been, we'd moved in, we'd been living together maybe about a year at that time, so about 2.5 years in. I don't remember if one of us proposed or not. I was trying to think about that, and I really can't recall. It seemed like the next natural step in the evolution of our relationship was to get married. And so we did premarital counseling, and then some friends of ours catered our wedding. We had a friend who was a Justice of the Peace in Lawrence, and she married us because it was very important to us that even though the state of Kansas, Douglas County, would not recognize our marriage, mm-hmm. it was important to us to go through the process of doing something that was legal, even if it wasn't legal at the time. It felt very powerful to do that. But the wedding itself, we wrote our own vows. They were sort of this mixture of songs we liked and different texts that we had liked. And we had a whole bunch of friends over. We had it at a friend's apartment, actually. And let's see. I'm trying to think. Anything else?
Well, we had a, in terms of having our friend do it, you know, in not exactly the legal way, but, you know. In
a civil, it was a Justice of the Peace, you said?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So in that way, it was civil.
It was a civil union.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And we wanted to have a serious ceremony, but then we just had a nice party afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it was certainly solemn. We exchanged rings. We exchanged vows. But then, you know, all of our friends were there, and that was what was important. And then it just merged into the evening party. You know.
Did you call it a wedding back then?
Julie says that we called it a commitment ceremony. I can't really remember. So she is also the one who remembers the dates and things. So I'm going with her call on this. I guess we called it a commitment ceremony, although what we called our relationship from that point on was a marriage. And what we called each other from that point on was wife, definitely. Yeah. That was very important to us. So.
And I have Mike and Dave over here nodding their heads. What about you all? Tell us about what your process of your ceremony.
Well, there was a time back when we first moved in together when, I don't know how we got on the topic, but we looked at each other and said, you know, if we were an opposite sex relationship, I think I'd ask you to marry.
No, I asked you because I was doing the laundry, and I was putting it away, and I said, you know, if we were a heterosexual couple, we'd probably be married right now. So I think that's the closest we came to proposing to each other. Yeah, you're doing the laundry.
Right.
We're a married couple now.
And how long were you together at that point?
We'd been together for a couple years at that point.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we had a Jewish wedding ceremony in Omaha in June of 1999, and that's what we date our anniversary from. That was our wedding, and it was important that it was a full Jewish wedding ceremony, a public statement of our commitment to each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, in front of friends and family, and you know, it was extremely important for Dave and I to do this. And
we did call it a wedding, and in Hebrew we called it a Brit Ahava, a covenant of love, because I think it was important that we gave it a term that was unique to our relationship, because not everything would be exactly the same as a same-sex or a heterosexual Jewish wedding. And we always give the example of, well, who's going to stomp on the glass at the end of the Jewish wedding? There's two men. So I look at the text and figure out, okay, well, we should always increase the observance. So we chose two glasses. The rabbi said, that's fine. I was going to say two glasses anyway because I don't want one of you stomping on the other foot while you're before you're walking down the aisle.
And was your family there as well?
Mike's family was there. Mine wasn't. I think it was a little bit too soon, and there was a little bit of finances involved. So it was a little bit difficult for them at the time to do that. My sister was there, though. My sister officially walked me down the aisle.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
and so,
nice.
And so I forgot to ask you, were any of your family at this ceremony that you all had?
We didn't Robert have any family there at the time. It was all just friends.
It was all just friends. I was thinking about that when I was thinking about talking today, that if we got married, if we were just getting together and getting married today, we would have invited our family.
Mm-hmm.
But that idea that you had that 20 years ago, you might not have thought of it that way. For me, it didn't even occur to me to invite my family, even though I was out to them. It just was not a part of my thinking at that time that they would have been a part of that. And now I wish that they could have been.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And it sounds like yours was very much a religious ceremony and very meaningful in that way for the two of you, Dave and Mike.
It really was. Mm-hmm. I think I was more interested in the religious aspects than Mike. I had always wanted a Jewish wedding. At my bar mitzvah, my mother gave me a tallis and said, your next tallis will be given to you by your wife at your wedding. Well, Mike went ahead and gave me my new tallis at our wedding, and we were married under it.
That's really nice. Yeah. And you all then had, yours was more of a civil ceremony than a religious one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And I remember you all having your ceremony. You were kind of my models for me later on. And it was also in the paper? Am I making this up?
They talked about it in the paper, mm-hmm. but we made a very strong decision when we went and entered the jury that we were not going to make it into a political statement. It was a private religious ceremony, though the paper had talked about it. We all agreed we weren't going to talk to the press. This was a private affair among our family, our friends, and our religion. It was not for public consumption. Things that we did later on in our lives were more public aspects to that private mm-hmm. ceremony. Do you have anything to add, Mike?
Yeah, at the time, back in 1999, we explicitly did not appear in any interviews or anything in the press because this was our wedding. This is for friends and family. There were some political events in Nebraska a few years later when they passed an anti-marriage ballot initiative mm-hmm. that at that time we made the decision to speak to the press to provide, kind of the angle of some people that had actually gotten married and what it would do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the original time of our wedding, we weren't in the press.
So it sounds like for you all, it was more of a personal religious ceremony. And for Julie and Roberta, it sounds like it was more of a civil, but in some ways political ceremony.
I think it was political in that, we certainly didn't, tell anyone who wasn't friends.
Yeah.
But coworkers and such gave us well wishes, and I don't remember really ever announcing it or saying anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the day before the day of my wedding, I got this card, and my coworkers brought out, some cupcakes or something and said, hey, by the way, congratulations. And I'm like, I didn't even know you guys knew what was going on. So it was... I guess I had talked about it more than I thought I did. So, not quite as much political, but much more out and open than I had imagined that it was.
Mm-hmm. And Roberta, you had something to add to that, or no? Okay, I thought you did. Okay, and I'm looking at the time, and this will be a good time to take a break for us to recognize our sponsors and underwriting for the station. So we'll take a break now for underwriting and announcements and then come back and continue our discussion and talk then more about your all California wedding and that process.
Support for KKFI provided in part by Californo's Restaurant, 4124 Pennsylvania in Westport, featuring a blend of contemporary American cuisine and European fare. Details at www.californos.com.
Say you'd like to help out KKFI but can't afford to bid on a band? Well, we could use help during the KKFI band auction. We need volunteers to answer the phone and take bids. This is your chance to visit our new station and meet some of Kansas City's finest entertainers at the same time. If you'd like to volunteer, check out the schedule at www.kkfi.org, band auction. And if you can help us out, email me, BillC@kkfi.org. That's BillC@kkfi.org.
KKFI is proud to announce another broadcast of the Homelessness Marathon starting Monday, February 23rd at 6 p.m. and ending Tuesday, February 24th at 8 a.m. only on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's radio like you've never heard it before.
You're listening to the 10th Voice on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's only LGBTQ radio news information program. I'm Elaine Meislis, your host, and you were just listening to Bette Midler singing the song Chapel of Love. And on today's show, we're talking about love, commitment, and the personal side of gay marriage. And I have on my show today Roberta Woods and Julie Warwick, who got married in October of 2008, and Dave Greenbaum and Mike Silverman, who went to California and got married this past summer. So now let's spend some time talking about your experience in making that decision to go to California and get married. So Mike and Dave, what made you decide to do this?
You know, I don't really think there was a decision. I remember when the announcement came out that California would allow same-sex marriage. That day I was with a client, and I get a call from Mike, And Mike says, just to let you know, California approved same-sex marriage. We have the first appointment at the clerk's office that day. I've already made the appointment. There was no discussion about it. I mean, it was just a foregone conclusion. Part of it is because we said in our marriage vows to each other in the religious ceremony that we would, to make parity with the religious commitments and the legal public commitments, we said we would seek out any and all legal recognition. So it was just something we would do, but, you know, fact that Mike, being a computer geek, got on there and got the first appointment of the day, that's what was really cool.
Yeah, I don't think there was any question that as soon as this was the first chance that we had to get legally married in America, and there was just no doubt that, you know, that we were going to take it as soon as it became available.
Now, as you say that, there have also been marriage amendments passed in Massachusetts, I believe. Now, well, Connecticut came after California. So had you thought about going anywhere else before that?
We'd given it some brief thought, but at the time, Massachusetts wasn't allowing couples from out of state to get married in Massachusetts. And so that was crossed off the list. And, of course, Connecticut hadn't happened yet. So there really was no place in the United States where we could get married legally until California changed.
And so when you say that you were the first to sign up at the clerk's,
were the first. We were in the first group on the first day that they allowed all people to get married. There were
June 17th. That was the first day.
Wow.
That basically anyone could get married in California. The previous evening, a few the plaintiffs in the original court case got obviously. Got to go first.
They got to go first.
Yeah, after everything they've been through.
Yeah.
Then the next morning was kind of the first time the doors of City Hall were open to everybody, and it was important to be among the first group, and so we were.
So what city and what door did you go through?
You know, there's a story about that we were talking. We saw the movie Milk, and Harvey Milk was on the front steps of San Francisco City Hall, and we're both watching the movie, and we both start crying because we stood on those same exact steps, and before they opened the doors, we held our Kansas flag, and then 30 reporters flanked us taking pictures, and it was so important that we were able to represent Kansas standing in front of San Francisco City Hall, the same place where Harvey Milk stood and really got his career going. I mean, it was just amazing. So we're just looking at each other during the movie. I'm crying. He's crying. And we both talk about it afterwards. So it was at San Francisco City Hall. Just thousands and thousands of people there. There were probably only about 10 couples, and we couldn't make it through the line because there were all the reporters. They had to basically start clearing out the, what would they call it, arcade or something like that, whatever room we were in, because we couldn't find out where to go. It was like going to the DMV. We kept going to the wrong line because we couldn't figure out which line to go to because there were so many reporters there.
And so they did it in groups at that time then? That day?
I think they had it organized a particular way, and then once it actually started happening, they kind of had to ad lib. But they essentially, you signed up for a slot, 15-minute slot, and so that, they roughly followed that, but it wasn't perfect. I mean, it was a pretty amazing day with everything going on, but we were in the first couples.
Very cool.
Yeah, you had to wait in line in order to get in the door. Then you had to wait in line in order to get the form. Then you had to fill out the form, and then you had to wait in line to get it certified. Then we'd have to testify. Then we had to wait in line to actually get the person to solemnize the ceremony. Then we had to wait in line to file the form. Then we had to wait in line to get the certificate. If it weren't for the fact that it was so exciting that it was same-sex marriage, it sounds like a day at the DMV.
Yeah.
It was a lot more fun than renewing your driver's license.
Yes. And better pictures.
Yeah. And so what did you mean you had to testify? What was that about?
Oh, I think Dave means that you have to affirm that, you know, you're not married to anybody else. It's like the oath.
We had to say the oath and show our driver's license, and then the woman's like, "You're from Kansas?" Yes, we're actually from Kansas. You know, here we are today, first day.
Okay, so I got to ask you, what were you wearing?
We dressed in our most formal T-shirts.
Uh-huh.
Because this was a civil ceremony. This wasn't the religious ceremony. And so I had my University of Kansas basketball championship shirt on.
And I wore my University of Kansas Hillel shirt.
Very cool.
So we were really proud to, you know, represent Kansas,
wow.
University of Kansas,
yeah.
And Lawrence, and, you know, national champions, what can you say?
Right. So. And so when you said there were reporters, was that national reporters that were covering your story, or...
Yeah, we. I don't know exactly how they found out about us, but
Kansas shirts.
Yeah, but there's ABC Television News.
Uh-huh.
Was following us in San Francisco, and so, you know, they were filming us. They actually filmed the civil ceremony and kind of filmed us like waiting in line and so forth. You know, as part of their news story, and then there were also, you know, various newspaper reporters for lots of different publications that were out there.
Yeah.
When we held out the Kansas flag, a lot of people started coming over to us.
I can imagine. Well, yeah, I can imagine. And what was your experience like? And when did you all go to California?
Ours wasn't quite that exciting.
No.
A few months had passed, of course, because we waited until October. Actually, we did the same kind of thing online. We registered about a month before, found a place. I have friends who live in California, in L.A., and so I just got in touch with them and said, "We're thinking about coming out here. Can we stay with you?" That was the important part at the time. And they said that they were also getting married, and this is a couple of friends who they've been together 21 years, and they have... by state of California, they have the domestic partner registry, so they had that, but it was still important for them, too, to get married. And so we just basically went to the same place they did because it was about 15 minutes from their house, and so it was just easy to get to. And since they had done it a couple of days before, they just sort of walked us through what it would be like.
So. How nice that you had someone out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah. It was. It was really nice.
That could help you through that. They could show you which rooms to go to.
Yeah.
Well, the question we have is, did you guys have the family planning guide?
We brought that back and showed it to everybody. It's very funny now that you're married.
Yeah. What's this?
They had a little family planning guide for, you know, now that you're married, and there's a picture of a husband and wife on the pamphlet. And by California law, they had to give that to every couple to, you know, help you with your family planning. And they said they were going to change it. So I'm curious if they obviously hadn't changed by the time you guys went out there.
And so was yours also then at a city hall? Or?
Yeah, we were at the Laguna Hills Courthouse.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't not as chaotic. Like I said, it had been a couple of
months. Wasn't the first day.
Right, not the first day, so things had calmed down a little bit. But we were in line with other couples. There were, I think that probably there was a lesbian couple who had just finished not too long before us, before we went in. And there are about two or three other heterosexual couples. I think maybe a couple were just getting their license, but there was a couple after us who were formally dressed, and they were ready to have their ceremony right then,
too. Their parents were there. It was very sweet.
Okay.
And so we went in, the same kind of thing. You get the form, you fill out the form, you do the swearing, you give them their license, and very, very much the same kind of thing, only quicker, obviously, for us. The whole thing took maybe... 30 minutes or so?
Probably,
well, we
so.
Did have the 15-minute increment, but we had the extra time in there to fill out the paperwork and all that.
Yes.
And what were you wearing?
We wore nice clothes.
Uh-huh.
But slacks. Just, slacks and a shirt.
Uh-huh. So no KU.
No.
And nothing like that. Yeah. And so what was it like for both of you to be doing this civil ceremony?
It was awesome. It was really quite spectacular. It's really hard... It's funny. When we were filling out the paperwork online, up to the point of actually filling out the paperwork, I was thinking, this is sort of a political thing. This is a good thing. We're joining the crowd. We're doing this. We, you know. We started filling it out. It was so emotional to put, you know, party A, party B. I mean, that we were entering into a system that sort of already existed. It's weird how emotional it was. We were crying, filling out this form online, you know, and then you go in the way that they had it in Laguna Hills was you filled out all the paperwork, and then you went into this little kind of chapel room. They had a fountain on the wall and a little podium, and our, I don't know exactly what you called the lady who married us, her official title, but she came and she has the book, and it's a very traditional kind of, you know, for better, for worse, for
richer or poor,
just like all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's quite emotional. We're standing there holding hands and that kind of stuff. And then she comes to the point where she says, by the power vested in me in the state of California, in the county of Orange, I now pronounce you legally married. So emotional. So just, I'm shaking right now just talking about how... It was such a powerful moment because, like I said, for us, it's always, we've called our relationship a marriage since we got married in 92. But somehow, it's kind of I've tried to put words on it. I just know that suddenly we were, okay, maybe this is a better way to describe it. When I told my friends and my coworkers that we were going to California to get married, all of my straight friends and coworkers, they were so, it was like they knew all the things to do and all the ways to be. Like, this was a marriage that they understood, and it felt so neat to be a part of that. It never occurred to me that it would feel that way, but it really did. Very affirming.
And Mike and Dave, what was it like for you to be having this civil ceremony?
I just remember it felt like we were kind of like walking, like floating on air going into the line. And I mean, part of it was because, you know, all of the hullabaloo over the first day, but still just, you were just like flowing along. Like, I felt like I was flowing along in this amazing, like this powerful river that was, you know, kind of carrying you along. And it's just really amazing. I remember like shaking when I filled out the form and we went up for the ceremony, kind of the same thing as it's a very short, you know, traditional civil ceremony, but just having the, you know, deputy marriage commissioner there, saying that for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, and just, you know, reading the ceremony was just amazing. You know, it's one of the most amazing emotional things I've ever felt in my life. I mean, just, it was real, and it's something they'll remember forever, no matter whatever happens in the world of politics. This happened, and we were there, and we got married.
Amen to that.
Yeah, it was really intense. I had always wanted the day to come, and I said to Mike that I said the minute this happens, I want to say the special prayer on special occasions, Shekhianu. And I mean, I never thought I'd be able to say it. It just, I couldn't even say the words afterwards because I'm like, oh my gosh, this day has come. I lived to this day to see this happen. I did not expect this to happen this soon. And for me, the one real significant difference was when we had gotten married in Omaha, or we had our wedding, I had always worn my wedding ring in my right hand. Because I did not have the same marriage as everyone else. And to put it on my left hand, and I remember once or twice afterwards taking off my ring to work on a computer, I'd put it on my right hand, and I called Mike. I said, I'm so sorry I put my ring on my right hand. Will you forgive me? So it's real. And now that you can kind of see it's kind of worn off. I don't no longer have the groove in my right hand from the ring, and the groove has started in the left hand. And to me, that was a real powerful symbol. I have the same marriage as everyone else. I am finally equal.
You know, which brings me to a question of how did your mindset shift then? And you pretty much just answered it, though, especially having had that earlier ceremony and now years later having this ceremony. I mean, did it make a different shift in how you viewed your relationship?
I think for us anyway, it did in more subtle ways. I'm much more adamant about saying wife now rather than partner. Not that we haven't always thought of each other that way, but if I'm talking to someone else, whether they know us both or not, I'll say, oh, yeah, my wife and I, blah, 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 and don't even think twice about it anymore, rather than, you know, that subtle censoring or anything by saying something else. So I think it has a little bit.
And what about for you guys?
I don't know about Mike, but I really started calling him my husband or my spouse back in 1999. Uh-huh. I was covering under his health insurance. Whenever we'd go to the doctor, I'd say husband. I don't really think it changed, except, like you said, subtle little things. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, yeah, that's, mm-hmm. we have that same thing. I'm the same as everyone else now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a powerful but subtle change. It's just, you know, like, if you imagine, you know, like a color slightly shifting, you notice it and it's different, but it, you know, it's not like, oh my God, this is incredibly new. I mean, because we've been together for many years, but mm-hmm. the fact that we're legally married, it's just a nice kind of thing to have in the back of your head.
It definitely gives you a sense of sort of personal power about your relationship, I would say. Like Julie had said, just being more, it's not that we weren't really married before. But now there seems to be, we have this really gorgeous piece of paper, for one thing. The California marriage license is really, really pretty.
I wish you, I should have asked.
Oh, my goodness. They are lovely.
Ours is hanging on the wall. I don't know about yours.
Yeah, definitely. But because some friends of mine who got married in Lawrence, one friend of mine in particular was like, wow, we got robbed. We just have this thing. It's like a photocopy. Look at this. You know, it's quite slang. So.
And so then, you know, so you all were in California,
mm-hmm.
in this atmosphere of acceptance and acknowledgement, I'm assuming. And
yes, our Julie's friends took us to Disneyland for our honeymoon, I guess you could call it, mm-hmm. the day after. And they gave us these buttons that said just married. And all of they call them the cast members, the people who run Disney, were like, congratulations. And even some of the people who were also visitors at Disneyland said, congratulations to us. So it was really nice.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
It was really fun. It was kind of fun.
And you were all in San Francisco enjoying your time there and being married in San Francisco with all, at this time, point in history. Had to be incredible.
It was a pretty amazing vibe, just, you know, being in that city at that point in history. I think you didn't, you compared it to
I'd said it's the atmosphere that day. The closest I could explain it is when the Berlin Wall fell, because it was such an emotional shift and there was just so much excitement. And people who had, we had gone to the Jewish Museum afterwards, and this woman just runs over to us, sees the shirt, and she says, I saw you this morning. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and it just made me feel wonderful. I was just walking around feeling mm-hmm. just really wonderful. And then it hit us, and then we were just exhausted.
Okay. And then, though, you get on a plane, and you come back to Kansas City, and then drive back to Lawrence. How's it been back being in the Midwest after having that experience?
I haven't really felt anything different.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, I mean, because, you know, we live here, so we know what it's like, just, you know, how to be every day and where you feel safe being more out or not. You know, Lawrence is good about that. Mm-hmm. I think for all of us that, I feel more comfortable. Not that I would necessarily go out in a way that I would if I were in San Francisco or maybe parts of L.A.,
uh-huh.
but it's certainly better than other parts of Kansas or the Midwest that I would be in. I don't think it changed in a big way other than just within ourselves,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't change on the inside, all that experience, more here you are back and in that way, I was wondering.
And then I also have really awesome coworkers, and they were, I think, as excited about it as I was. So mm-hmm. I coasted on that. I coasted on the wedding for quite a long time afterwards, just having them around.
And now we're bringing you out today. You coasted. And Mike and Dave, what about for you guys?
It's probably a pretty similar experience, that it's not like there's no stunning shift in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life goes on a day-to-day basis the same as it was before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nice just occasionally, just randomly, Dave and I will look at, you know, I'll look at Dave or Dave will look at me and say, hey, you know, we're married. And it's always kind of a nice little way to, like, bring some cheer to the day.
So then Proposition 8 happened. What was the effect for you guys then with this vote? There's a sigh.
There's a definite silence in the room right now.
Yeah.
You know, well, there was so much elation with, you know, a new president and a very positive move in that way. And then, like, in the same hour, finding out, you know, that in California this had passed. And so there's this great joy and then this great, like, oh, what the damn, really? Jeez.
Yeah.
And so it was definitely disappointing, but unhappily not surprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, obviously, election night was really bittersweet because we were incredibly excited right at 10 o'clock when they announced the new president. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, half an hour later, you could see the first returns coming in from Prop 8. And, it's profoundly disappointing. I don't want to say it was a complete surprise because, you know, it's very hard to, even in California, to win a ballot initiative.
Yeah.
But still, you know, extremely disappointing.
I was really, really in a bad place that morning. Mm-hmm. I went to my business group, and I just got up, and I was supposed to talk about something. I just said, you know what? I just got divorced without my consent, and I'm going home. Mm-hmm. And I just left, and a couple people called and said, what happened? And they hadn't really connected the fact that this, they were all talking about Obama, that here was this thing that directly affected someone they knew about.
Yeah.
And now my marriage was in a state of legal limbo.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of, after being so upset, I got a lot of positive emails and text messages that we've always considered you married. And no law in California is going to change what we think about you or your commitment to each other. So it made me feel a lot better. It still hurt. It still hurts just people out there just voting on your marriage. And, you know, just a simple majority can determine, yep, you get rights and you don't get rights. And that's just
and
not
especially
fair.
After having been recognized with the rights and having them taken away. You know, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the show on that Kent Starr and the Proposition 8 Legal Defense Fund, they've now filed legal briefs defending the constitutionality of Proposition 8, but also seeking to nullify the marriages that were performed in California. And, I mean, how's this affecting you?
Just even that word defend. I mean, what's there to defend the fact that they want to be able to discriminate? We're the ones that need defense. We're having something taken away from us that was given to us. We're the ones that really need the defense out there.
Yes, and there just so happens to be a petition is being sent over the Internet asking people to sign a letter asking for the California Supreme Court to repeal Proposition 8, and that's happening right now as we speak. And so for the listeners who may not know about that, you can get more information and you can go to www.couragecampaign.org. I'm assuming you're nodding your head. You know about this.
I've read about it.
You've read about it. And Dave and Mike.
Absolutely. And those things do make a difference because Supreme Courts do look at the impact of their decisions on the greater community. And one of the basis of to invalidate Prop 8 is because it takes an important civil right away that should not have been done by a simple majority. And the more people that speak up that, yes, this is a civil right and it should not have been taken away, the more likelihood that the Supreme Court may decide, yeah, this is too controversial of an issue to have been decided by a simple majority.
Mm-hmm. And so we'll all be watching very closely starting March 5th, I believe, is when the hearings start to see what happens with this. And I so want to thank you all for coming on today's show and sharing your wonderful experience, sharing your lives with us, telling us your stories, and just the incredible experiences that you had. It really is a pleasure to have both couples on today and taking the time to come here and be with us. I really appreciate that.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having us.
Next week will be the youth edition of the 10th Voice. Your hosts will be Hannah Kapp-Klott and Ryan Heiser. If you have topics for future shows or you want to comment on this one, we always appreciate your feedback and welcome it. And you can send an email to the10thvoice@aol.com. We're also on the web at myspace.com/the10thvoice. Stay tuned next for This Way Out, up at 2. I was going to end the show with another marriage song, but given what we just talked about And with what's happening with the issue of civil rights, I'm going to play the song Something Inside So Strong. It's sung by the wonderful group that was known as the Flirtations. It's a song about spirit and not being silent. And it just seems appropriate as LGBT civil rights are once again being challenged. As Dave so well put, I'm being divorced and I have no control over this, so to speak. So for the 10th Voice, I'm Elaine Meislish. Go out and have a good weekend.
The higher you build your barriers, the taller I become. The farther you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, there's something inside so strong. Oh, something inside so strong. The more you refuse to hear my voice, the louder I will sing. The more you refuse the things I need, the more I want everything.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's now time for This Way Out.